You are listening to an American Free Press podcast. Joining me on the line is Mark Anderson, the roving editor for American Free Press. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here with you, Dave.
Mark, you just got back from the NATO summit in Chicago, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I want to talk about that in detail because you were there actually to witness what was going on. And most people, such as myself, we were only able to see what was going on the internet. It seemed pretty rowdy out there. But for the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little bit of background about who you are.
Well, I'm a longtime reporter originally from Michigan, Southwest Michigan. Went through the standard conventional press mill and then kind of woke up in the earlier 1990s to mid-90s as to the bigger picture of what was going on politically, economically, and eventually came to work for American Free Press, the Washington, D.C.-based newsweekly. And I've covered a number of issues, but lately, in the last couple of years, I've helped cover the obscure Bilderberg Group and other internationalist groups, and that led me to the NATO summit here in 2012, where for the first time ever, they met in a major American city other than Washington, D.C. For the first time in NATO's existence, NATO was born as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in 1949. So that's sort of a broad brush, a quick version of where I came from. And it's very important that people understand these larger alliances and what they are and what they mean for their individual nations.
Right. Absolutely. That's why I want to start right here with NATO. Of course, that's, I guess, an acronym for, as you said, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Give the listeners a little background about NATO itself. When was it created and what's their purpose?
Well, it was created in 1949 as an offshoot of the UN Charter. The UN Charter provided for regional organizations, and they used that as the launch pad for NATO in the immediate wake of World War II, curiously born not long after the International Monetary Fund and World Bank were born at Bretton Woods, just a little bit earlier in the 1940s. At any rate, Russia had just tested its first nuclear weapon, and NATO was born as a stated purpose for the defense of Europe from Soviet aggression. And they pooled their resources slowly but surely, the growing alliance. It now has 28 members, and then there are partners. And at any rate, over the years, NATO did, by and large, remain a defensive alliance and really didn't do much, if anything, offensive or what you would define as offensive. But as things changed over the years and the geopolitical world began to evolve and as new designs were foisted upon it by the designers and think tanks and among the banking elite and among the political elite, they wanted to reassign NATO a new mission to remake its image, as it were. And this is what its backers are talking about now constantly. How do we remake NATO, its image, renew its mission for the 21st century? Well, the war on terror, of course, is a ready-made antidote to that problem for NATO. So now they see a very broad mandate far beyond its original defense posture. And that is typically promoted by groups like the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, which originally was the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, which is the name of a noted pro-globalist group in New York City, born in 1921. Well, the very next year, 1922, the former Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, now the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, was born. They are the main bugle call, you might say, behind NATO, the main promoters. I've went to a number of their meetings to pick up NATO literature, and it's interesting. The people that believe in an internationalist government are more aggressive than ever right now. I've never seen them so busy. They're having two or three symposiums per day during the NATO summit, when normally they might have six or eight per month. And so they're really on the move, but they know people are catching on, people that believe in nationalist government, people that don't want those larger governmental and economic designs. So they seem to be really pushing the gauntlet, being very bold, very audacious about the renewed NATO mission in this, what they call a new world order or internationalist government as opposed to nationalist government. And you even see that in the famous area of Chicago called the Miracle Mile on North Michigan Avenue in that area, where there's a bunch of flags right now. Chicago has its own flag and the American flag, the state of Illinois, and now the NATO flag flies right alongside them. They even had a pro-NATO ceremony complete with the NATO flag at this past Saturday Chicago White Sox Cubs game, one of the favorite games of the year, and they even celebrated NATO there, which I'm sure some saw as rather inappropriate or over the top. Hillary Clinton was there at Wrigley Field, and these are a number of things that are going on on recently, but the broad panorama of this is NATO sees itself as the gendarmes, the security force, the army of the 21st century and beyond. And what's interesting, too, is that the United Nations itself isn't mentioned much anymore, even though NATO came from the UN Charter. And people used to talk about UN troops and the dangers they posed, some that believe that poses a danger. But NATO seems to have the baton right now, that's for sure. So what's going on in Chicago is surely a sign, by their own words, that they're turning a corner and, coercively or not, they want to push toward a future of their making.
So they were created, as you said, in 1949, and I guess they really started to get aggressive after the collapse of the Soviet Union, right?
Yeah, then they slowly began to take on this new quasi-offensive posture. It didn't really manifest itself strongly until they started lobbing NATO bombs into Yugoslavia in 1999, as I recall, hitting hospitals and schools. Very brutal stuff, very outrageous stuff. And then from there, things got a little quiet, and then they were involved at least as an adjunct force in the beginning of the U.S. invasion or occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq. In Afghanistan, of course, NATO's been accused of atrocities such as helicopter gunships gunning down children on hillsides who were gathering food and water. These stories were in the headlines not so long ago, early this year, late last year. And a lot of people, I think a lot of Americans especially, don't realize just how deep NATO is involved currently, now that it's getting this new mission, this new mandate, how much they're involved in the current conflicts lingering in Iraq and especially in Afghanistan. And Afghanistan, to fast forward to the here and now, is the big topic, among others, at the current NATO summit. How long are we going to remain there? Just what is this about? But I believe they're telling a lot of lies and a lot of distortions regarding the exit from Afghanistan.
So the summit started this weekend, right?
Yeah, May 20 and 21, technically. But what's interesting, Dave, is that I began covering this in earnest in late March of this year, when Nicholas Burns, the former U.S. ambassador to NATO, spoke. And he was the first speaker at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs to kick off their kind of official series of programs to welcome NATO to town. And right after that, I was talking to fellow AFP writer Jim Tucker on the phone. And I told Jim, I said, you know, Jim, they're meeting at the Chicago Hilton, kind of a famous hotel, formerly known as the Conrad Hilton. I said, you know, Jim, they're having a whole series of meetings here, public meetings, open to the public, but then they're having kind of a planning committee, steering committee, group of policy wonks, academics, officials, and whatnot that are having closed door meetings close to all the press, not just alternative press, but Chicago Tribune can't go in, Chicago Sun-Times can't go in. And of course, Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, a former Obama administration chief of staff, is now mayor of Chicago, and he's putting his imprimatur on all this under World Business Chicago and other outfits. And so I personally believe that a lot of the NATO decisions were already made in late March at these closed door meetings. And I'm working on substantiating this, but I think that then the meetings this past weekend, May 2021, 2/12, are just to sort of put the final stamps and details on what was already worked out.
Okay, I got you. And of course, Rahm Emanuel was, as you said, Obama's chief of staff. Didn't he also serve in the Israeli Defense Forces?
That's what I've always heard. You know, I've never seen concrete, you know, beat you on the head proof of that, but I've never heard him deny it either. And I believe he has dual citizenship. At any rate, whatever that case may be, Rahm, curiously, is a guy, very flinty, you might say, who doesn't like questions being asked of him, and yet he wanted to be mayor of Chicago so badly that he bent the rules to get on the ballot, even when a judge had ruled him ineligible for the ballot. Talk about connections. It was as if someone made a phone call and suddenly, hey, I'm mayor. And so people can read into that what they will, but he set a lot of tight permit limits on the marchers and protesters who were there in the thousands during the summit. Yet, Emanuel managed to have more police than there were protesters, and that was no easy task.
This guy's one of my favorites. That's what I wanted to get to now, the actual people who showed up. Now, of course, the mainstream media is well known for minimizing the number of patriots that show up at various rallies throughout the country and the world, where there might be 100,000 people protesting. They'll tell you there's 10,000. How many people were there? Do you have any idea?
I would say by the time everyone got in line to march, which included Jesse Jackson, the notable black activist, it probably was pushing 3,000, 3,500, and that's when everybody was there. This was the main event because Iraq Veterans Against the War were poised to return their medals, symbolically at least, to NATO generals because they felt shame in destroying foreign lands during the NATO wars, Afghanistan, Iraq. So even before that big march, though, the number of police was just completely outrageous. You could barely walk in a bathroom, and I'm barely exaggerating, without a cop sitting there, standing there, anywhere. And they did much more to impede traffic and commerce than the sporadic protests that led up to the big protests. And even the big protests moved along fine. The police were the main obstacles to commerce and traffic and business as usual, not the protesters. But it really was probably about 3,500 to 4,000 people all told that day. The weather was unseasonably warm, but clear. And so this was the big event on Sunday, May 20. But the riot police from the state and local levels, plus other security before and during and after that big rally in March, was still more than that, believe it or not. And one officer told me that the city police alone were 3,000 to 4,000 above their normal allotment.
Jeez. What was the mood of the crowd? Were the people friendly? Were they angry? Did they really want to let NATO and these officials know how they felt?
Oh, big time. There was a lot of anger, but principled anger, intellectualized anger, you might say. At the four-hour rally, they said a number of things that were very pointed comments, and they didn't mince words. One guy, quote-unquote, said, "Death to NATO." He didn't really mean it literally, but he was just being dramatic. That was perhaps the most blunt comment of the overall event. But the rally at this park is where they vented and kind of got their intellectual marching points in order to strengthen their resolve to get through this long march where the medal ceremony would happen, where Iraq's Veterans Against the War would throw away their medals. And they wanted to get that far because that was the main point they wanted to make. This was the big march, the big rally of the overall protest. And one man said, "I'm here to say that there should not be any homeless veterans in this country." Another said, "You are making war against the will of the people, and it will stop." They're talking to NATO as they're saying this. A German activist said, quoting Einstein, "We must overcome the institution of war." And then he added, "Thus we must overcome NATO." And he said that NATO overall costs $1 trillion a year to operate. All told, every penny probably for every bit of electricity every time they flush the toilet. Who knows? But I guess that's $1 trillion in round numbers. I need to verify that one. It wouldn't surprise me. A black activist called NATO the North Atlantic Terrorist Organization and denounced it for its operations in recent years in Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Libya, and he really focused on Libya, saying it was bombed for 8 months, quote, "by the president and by NATO," end quote. And then he added, "down with the African command."
What is the African command?
He can only mean NATO's groundwork for the African Union, because NATO kind of subtly lets it slip once in a while that they're kind of an interference and acquisition force for the free trade system. And I'm beginning to think that was the whole point of the creation of NATO, and maybe the whole Soviet thing was just a red herring, because the African command would support an African Union and the Pacific Union and an African Union and a planned North American Union. These are the free trade building blocks for the world trade system that sort of underpins a political internationalist world government. So that seems to be NATO's big picture. And there are reports, and I know a soldier right here in Michigan, right where I'm at, that has told me flat out he's going to Africa as part of this African command. So it seems to be laying the groundwork for the African Union, a free trade bloc.
So there were people protesting, not just from the United States, but from all over the world?
Yeah, there were some. You know, you could pick up on their accents. You really couldn't talk to a whole lot of people. It was quite an ordeal being boxed in by the police and trying to carry out a march that came after the rally. The way the police did it, it made it a chore to move forward. They allowed free speech and assembly to happen, but they boxed it in. People couldn't go left. They couldn't go right. They were completely surrounded by cops in two rings. The inner ring being plainclothes, regular uniform cops, the outer ring being lines and barriers of riot gear cops in full riot gear. One of the great ironies was, as people walked along, some from overseas, mostly from around the United States. I was outside the immediate perimeter while I had others inside who were kind of witnessing for me. And as we got up to this set of transit buses, in the electronic sign, it had "My Kind of Town Chicago Is." And that, of course, is that favorite song, "My Kind of Town Chicago
Sure, Sinatra, is. I think, right?
Right. And yet it's flanked by riot gear cops, something very menacing combined with a light, fun song. And everyone caught on the irony of that. There must have been 3 billion photos taken of that scene. I had seen that earlier at a smaller protest the day before. So I guess these guys are beyond irony. They don't get the humor. But everyone made their way south, and meanwhile, the NATO summit's going on at the well-known McCormick Place, a couple of miles or so to the southeast along the lake, a pretty easy place to keep segregated because there's not much on the lake side of that facility. Everything's on the west side. The east side is pretty much the lake, so it's easy to keep undesirables out of the area. So there it went, and the ceremony of the Iraq Veterans Against the War, which included Afghanistan veterans, went on as planned. And the police had to sit there and listen to a string of very emotional, passionate speeches. And these soldiers literally confessed their crimes, Dave. You couldn't hold back the tears if you tried. There was lady soldiers speaking as well, and that really added the emotional tension, the emotional sizzle to this. And there wasn't a dry eye in the place, and very somber. A lot of solidarity among the protesters, though, with the only possible exception being the usual anarchists that show up, where you don't quite know who they are or where they're from. Of course, they wear bandana masks around their face, and
Right. They
tend to stir up trouble where others don't. But they were a minority.
Do you know how many elites attended the Chicago NATO summit?
They represented some 62, 63 nations, because I counted 64 from the local Chicago NATO website. But that's where the Chicago Council on Global Affairs partnered with NATO and other organizations to make all this happen. And they listed 64 participating entities. Two of those were NATO itself and then the United Nations itself. So besides NATO and the United Nations, there were 62 others, and those were actual nations. And each of those had anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 representatives.
A whole hell of a lot of elites. And it's over now, right, Mark?
It's winding up today. There's going to be a lot of postings on the NATO website, on the Chicago Council on Global Affairs website. But these people never rest. I guess a lot of ambition is backed by a lot of money. And they have endless supplies of money in the local Global Affairs Council and in the different interlocking groups. And they just don't stop, Dave. It's just incredible, the pace, the constant programs to sell Americans and Chicagoans on the idea that anything short of full-blown internationalism could be nothing else than isolationism, and you're wanting to hole yourself up in a cave somewhere, and you don't even want to see the sun, let alone the outside world. These people are absolutely fanatics about internationalism. They can't even countenance the idea of a national interest. It's not even in their vernacular.
Right. They're relentless.
They're just completely relentless. And when you read their papers, it's curious. It's not just a cure for insomnia. The dryness is only matched by the audacity. And a lot of their articles are actually just a thinly veiled complaint that the world isn't the way they want it all the time in all respects. With Russia, we must do this. And with nationalists in this country or that country, we must do that. We must convince them that this is the way to go. Even though they claim that they want to do something about the fact that America, get this, and this is the Chicago Council on Global Affairs' own words, the United States could soon grow tired of covering 75% of NATO's bill and subsidizing NATO by spending 3 times the European average. And they'll say things like, yeah, the U.S. could grow tired of that, like, duh, you think? But then a few paragraphs later, they'll say, but for now, America will just have to kind of tough it out while we allow other nations that are members of NATO to, you know, do things according to their tight budgets. And, you know, they've got their budgetary constraints, but they talk as if America's budgetary constraints can just wait and we can just keep paying 75% of the NATO bill.
That brings us back to what you were talking about earlier about internationalism. Because if, as the polls show, that the vast majority of Americans are against the war in Afghanistan, or against the war in Iraq, or against this war on terror, or against a lot of these things these guys are just shoving down people's throats, as you say, in a relentless fashion, the United States pays the bulk of NATO. Is it that the United States is not in charge here, that there are larger forces manipulating the purse strings of the United States? And are these the internationalists? Because obviously, to even the lay observer, you could see, well, here's NATO. It seems like it's doing its own thing. The United States be damned. Everybody else be damned. We're going to do this. Who are the bad guys? Who's controlling NATO? Who's waging these wars?
As I mentioned earlier, Dave, although the ultimate answer to that question may be a little bit elusive, NATO seems to be kind of this could be a slight misstatement, but sort of the merchant marine or overall police force and private security force for the international banking system and the free trade system, as I noted earlier. They seem to now be focused on that. Maybe it was their original purpose all along and the rest was just window dressing, but they seem to be on a footing whereby they protect the profit systems that the free traders and the bankers have put together, and they make or break nations that want to get in the way. Many point to the establishment of a new kind of central bank not long after the bombs started falling in Libya. It seems that you're either part of the global grid or you're against it, and NATO's job is to make sure that you're forcibly annexed into the system, and other nations are going to be looked at to join NATO or at least become partners. When Nicholas Burns, who I spoke of earlier, talked to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs in late March, he mentioned how NATO's looking eastward now, wanting to possibly bring Australia, New Zealand, and others into its fold in some way, shape, or form, probably to get more money and to make sure those nations become part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the big free trade zone there for the Pacific Union. Who's in charge of NATO is a little elusive, but what they're about is not very elusive. It's in print in their own documents, but especially in their cheerleaders in this global affairs group and similar fake grassroots think tanks that dot this nation in favor of globalism. I know that doesn't totally answer your question, but NATO is a military alliance that's seeking a certain kind of world. They're not just protecting freedom from aggression or knocking down aggression where they see it attacking innocence, as they like to claim. They're molding a world that they want a certain way, and that's to continue the profit system that the private banking system has had in place since the Bank of England was founded in 1694. They keep saying that, or repeating, that we're going to be out of Afghanistan, NATO, America, a few other sundry coalition soldiers by 2014. The New York Times will say 2014. The Washington Post will say 2014. But I heard right in the same room the former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Ronald Newman, say flat out, no speculation, and AFP has reported this, we'll be there till 2016 at least. And then earlier this month, right when the History Channel was showing a dramatization of how Navy SEALs supposedly got someone named Osama bin Laden, that very night, President Obama was on TV talking about a U.S. presence into 2024 in Afghanistan, the first time that's ever crossed his lips. And remember, the Afghanistan policy is a huge topic at the NATO summit that's just wrapped up. But yet you read the papers, you read the NATO statements, they keep flipping around this 2014 target date, but it just isn't true. It's 2016 minimum.
NATO's done. Any other big internationalist summits happening?
Well, there's the annual Bilderberg Group, the Bilderberg Conference. I've always joked it sounds like a place to get a burger, but I wish it was just something that innocent and fun. But they're meeting, as AFP has noted through Jim Tucker, in Chantilly, Virginia, near Dulles Airport at the end of this month into early June. And I intend to be there to help Jim, sort of our gentleman's tradition there. It's a lot of fun in its own way. And yeah, that's the big one. But while those big ones happen, you have these Chicago Global Affairs Councils and similar groups, many of whom are known as councils on world affairs or variations of that name. They're all just offshoots of the original Council on Foreign Relations in New York. They're having constant meetings in Houston, in San Antonio, in Chicago, in New York, in other cities across the country to sell the NATO philosophy, the internationalist philosophy to the local politicians, to the local media, to marinate everyone in the virtues of globalism. That's what these think tanks are about at the city and local level. And a lot of things are announced and promulgated through those groups, even though we have the big boys, the big leagues, you might say, like Bilderberg, tarnishing every town they enter, as it were. A lot of their documents lately that I've picked up are actually quite explicit. I would call them secretive, not outright secret, because it's just that a lot of Americans diverted by bread and circuses and working three jobs or whatever the case, don't have time to pay attention. But these internationalists, they do state their purposes and they do state their agenda fairly explicitly. Of course, they can't put all the cards on the table and they tell lots of lies, but they don't hide a whole lot anymore because they can't. They've got to do as much as they can, appear above board, make friends and influence people, as Dale Carnegie used to say, and beat the people to the punch while we're waking up to what's going on. But there's always hope in that because the awakening is exponential now. I've seen young people, my son Evan accompanied me to the Chicago NATO summit, young people like him, so many thousands of others that are waking up and they're passionate about wanting to fix things. They're not just concerned, they're passionate, they're motivated, and there's always hope in that. And I was accompanied by Josh Harvey and his friend Kim. I want to acknowledge them. They brought video equipment, far better than my video equipment, and they're working on video footage of the march and the rally and some of the things I had to say, and that should be soon posted on our website. At least that's the intent. So hats off to Josh Harvey too.
Mark, thanks for sharing all this information about the NATO summit in Chicago and covering it, and I'm looking forward to talking to you when you cover also Bilderberg coming up in Chantilly, Virginia.
Thank you, Dave. No problem. Look forward to it.